The Kentucky General Assembly's decision to allow charter schools in the Commonwealth has brought mixed reactions. It's also caused a debate among educators and groups such as teachers' unions and the National Education Association.
Charter schools bills had passed out of the Republican-led state Senate many times over the last decade, but were thwarted in the House, which was controlled by Democrats. Supporters of the law say charters will create competition for traditional public schools, especially underperforming ones. Opponents worry that the law will sap students and funding from traditional public schools.
On this week's Eastern Standard, charter schools. We're interested in your questions, your comments, or your personal stories on the topic. Write to us right now, WEKU Eastern Standard at gmail.com. Send a tweet at WEKU EST, or be prepared to call in when we open the phones in just a few minutes. It's time for Eastern Standard right after the latest news from NPR. From the studios of WEKU on the campus of Eastern Kentucky University, this is Eastern Standard. Hello, I'm John Hingsbergen. Earlier this year, Kentucky's General Assembly passed legislation allowing the Commonwealth to become the 44th state in the Union with charter schools. On this week's show, we'll discuss what makes a charter school different from traditional public or private schools, how they will be regulated or supervised, when they may happen in Kentucky, and other details with our panel of guests. And of course, we're interested in hearing from you, our listeners, as well. And I'll tell you how you can contact us after I introduce our guests. First up, I want to welcome Richard Day. Dr. Richard Day is chair of, actually, he's faculty regent. Let me get that correct. Faculty regent and professor in the EKU School of Clinical Education Preparation.
Good morning, John.
Richard, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
We also welcome another person who is an assistant professor of education at the Eastern Kentucky University, and that is Dr. Tom Shelton, former Fayette County Superintendent, Executive Director of the Kentucky Association of School Superintendents. Tom, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, John. It's good to be here.
And on the phone line, we welcome Brent McKim, President of the Jefferson County Teachers Association. Brent was a high school physics teacher for 15 years. He's been president of the Teachers Association in Jefferson County for about 16 years. He lobbies the state legislature on behalf of members and is chair of the Representative Council. Also serves on the National Education Association's Committee on Legislation. Brent McKim, thanks for being with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity.
We're grateful for all of you being part of our conversation today, and we will hopefully in a little while be hearing from the principal of a charter school, actually in the Cincinnati area, but we'll tell you more about her and about her school when we get her on the line, which is likely to be in about 15 minutes or so. But let me first tell our listeners, if you have a question, a comment, a personal story on the topic of charter schools, please feel free to get on board. You can send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. You can send a tweet at WEKU EST, or you can call and get on the line. Please be patient if you're on the line, because it'll take a few minutes before we can actually get you on the air. But you are welcome to call 800-621-8890. Let me start with Richard Day, because you were first in the studio this morning.
That's as good a basis as any.
Exactly. And let's talk about what define a charter school for our listeners. I mean, we know they're different from traditional public schools. They're different than private schools.
Yes, and charter schools have become different things in different places. The original idea was etched out in around 1988, which significantly is roughly the same time Kentucky was about to go through systemic education reform. So while this topic became a national topic, in Kentucky not so much, because we were up to our hips in alligators and plenty busy doing other things. But Albert Shanker and a professor in Massachusetts, as I recall, kind of came up with the idea about ways to improve schools that were not being successful and were having high dropout rates. That was the original idea. And it wasn't very long after charter schools began, and they started in Minnesota around 92, that different kinds of approaches were taken to charter schools, including trying to make a profit from running a school. And so this idea that began as kind of an incubator for creative ways to do a better job with kids and reduce dropout rates, that would then inform our practices in the traditional public schools all of a sudden kind of took a segue with a lot of people and became profit centers. And so the schools started to take different kinds of approaches, such that Shanker ultimately disavowed his own idea and claimed that charters weren't such a great idea.
But this is, does a charter school mean a certain type of curriculum or a certain approach to education, like we hear of alternatives like Montessori schools or techniques of teaching? Or is charter merely about structure and organization?
Well, I think it should be about trying to find an innovative approach to do a better job with kids and to improve college readiness and graduation rates and that kind of a thing. It just doesn't always seem to go that way. And much of that seems to depend on how well-structured a state law is when charters come into play.
And Richard, do I understand correctly, you were a principal of a
That's
school,
correct.
And you were telling me before the broadcast that you may be the first school principal in this state to have gone to the governor asking to establish a charter school?
I imagine that's true. We were aware, of course, that charter schools were a national thing going on. And around 1996, the school at Cassidy Elementary in Lexington, where I was principal, we were not fans of the primary program that you may recall was implemented under CARA. And it was kind of this multi-aging approach to organizing students for instruction. And you can organize kids a lot of different ways, but it was our opinion that the state was not supporting the multi-age program that they were requiring us to put in place. And to be really honest about it, we were just looking for a way out. We didn't have a solid plan about innovative instruction. We just thought that we were going to be more successful with our kids if we didn't have to go through all the multi-aging and the teachers weren't being trained properly and some of those kinds
of
things.
So that fact does not put you in the category of being a strong advocate for charter schools?
I consider myself to be a very weak advocate for charter schools. I have a son that teaches AP Economics in a charter high school in Atlanta. I've seen charter schools that I think do an effective job. I've seen some that appear to be horrific, and most of them are in the middle, just like other schools.
Let me turn to Dr. Tom Shelton. And Tom, as a former superintendent of Lexington Fayette Schools, you left that position a little more than 2 years ago. As a school superintendent, I am curious about how you would have approached the current environment in Kentucky there was a partisan element to this whole issue of charter schools for some reason. There was no way charter schools could get through while there was at least one body in the Kentucky government and the Kentucky General Assembly controlled by Democrats. I guess, is that because of a relationship to teachers' unions? Can you clarify that for me, and maybe even Brent McKim? What was the political element that made this happen? Because the Republicans are now in control in the state.
Well, I guess what my thought would be is if you look at the history of charter schools that Richard was just talking about, there has been support for charter schools from both parties over time. For example, in the Obama administration, we had a big push toward charter schools, and actually Kentucky strongly started talking about charter schools a few years ago, back when there was the quote-unquote race to the top funds that were made eligible for states to apply for. And actually, when you applied for them, one of the criteria that was looked at was, did you have charter schools in your state?
Oh, interesting.
And we did not. So that was coming out of a Democratic, administration. So
it's not necessarily a partisan issue.
Historically, it hasn't been. Mm-hmm. But in Kentucky, that has been the case.
Okay.
In Kentucky, and certainly would like to hear from my colleagues on this, but in Kentucky, we've not truly defined, what charter schools meant or would look like in our state. And
even today in the current legislation?
Well, there's been an attempt at that in the current legislation, but I know we're going to get into that in a little bit more depth in a minute. But if you look at the other states who have implemented charter schools, as Richard indicated, there are so many different structures and formats of those schools It's hard to say exactly, you know, what we were going to be facing or what was going to be implemented in Kentucky. We certainly did not want to take some other state's model and just plug it in into our state. And so I think that's been a lot of what the resistance has been about. We didn't want to see privatization of our public schools. We didn't want to see here we are in a state that has the one of the lowest funding for public schools in the country. We continue to receive an F in the reporting that's done in, on our school funding, and yet here we are talking about creating a new different type of school system or school structure. And so I think most of Kentucky's resistance has been trying to protect our current schools and advocate for what the needs are in our current schools, in my opinion.
What is the role of someone in the position, such as Dr. Manny Calk, who's now the superintendent of schools in Lexington, Fayette County, and the position that you held? What's their role in relationship to the possibility of charter schools? Did they have any role of supervision or involvement in that process?
Well, I'd first like to kind of add to what Richard was saying about what a charter school is. To me, the way I look at it and explain it to people is think about the word charter. It's really another word for a contract, if you think about it. And the charter or the contract spells out how the school is structured, how it's governed, and how it's operated.
And it's a contract between whom?
Under House Bill 520, in most cases, it would be through the local school board, the Board of Local Board of Education, and the charter school.
So this organization is contracting with the Board of Education to operate a school.
A group could come to a local board basically ask that, you know, they would like to start a charter school and propose a charter. And the school board would have the opportunity to either affirm that or deny that charter application. I know we're going to get into this more in depth, so I'll just briefly touch on this, that, you know, part of the issues that we have with the current law as this bill has been enacted is the appeals process if a local board did deny that application. And then the other really strong piece that we oppose is for Lexington and Louisville, where you have the possibility of mayoral authorization of a charter school. You know, it is, in our opinion, best if the education in a local community is monitored and controlled by the local Board of Education.
So, and we're due to take a short break in a moment, but had the current legislation been passed while you were in office as superintendent in Fayette County, would you have been in favor of it, in support of that legislation?
Well, the way I would answer that question is to say I would not have seen a need for charter schools and really still do not. If you look at Kentucky, Richard mentioned specifically CARA, 1990s major education reform in Kentucky. Just a few things from that. Number one, at that point, we had in Kentucky enacted a school-based decision-making authority, which effectively allows all schools to be flexible and creative in the way they're structured. But since then, you've had alternative schools created, such as the Carter G. Woodson Academy and other programs across our state. And you've had districts of innovation and things like that.
Dr. Tom Shelton is with us. Dr. Richard Day is with us. Brent McKim of Jefferson County Teachers Association, we have not forgotten about you. We'll get to you in just a few moments, and hopefully another guest who is a principal of a current charter school. Email us, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com. Give us a call if you have a question, comment, or story, 800-621-8890.
Well, we got no choice.
This is Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking charter schools just as the schools are beginning to get out for the summer. Eastern Kentucky University, commencement happening over this coming weekend. And What better time to talk about education is when folks are kind of reassessing where they've been in the past academic year and, of course, getting ready for the next academic year in just a few months. I'm John Hingsberg, and we're talking charter schools on this week's show. Dr. Richard Day is with us. Dr. Tom Shelton is with us. Brent McKim is on the line. And am I correct that Tiffany Williams is now on the line? Are you there, Tiffany? Tiffany, I guess we should have you selected now. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Excellent. Thank you for being with us. Tiffany, I understand you're a principal of the Cincinnati College Preparatory Academy.
Yes, sir. I've been at the school for about 10 years now. I started my career in education around 2004 when I graduated from the University of Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. And I started my journey with CCPA in 2008. Started off teaching in the elementary building. In 2013, I joined the administration team as an assistant principal while earning my second master's degree in educational administration. And I eventually moved on to be the K-6 principal in 2015.
Excellent. And so your school, the Cincinnati College Prep Academy, having operated almost 10 years now, how long has Ohio had charter schools? It's been some time now?
Yeah, Ohio's had charter schools for a really long time. CCPA was actually established in 1999. We are considered one of the oldest charter schools in Southwest Ohio, as long as one of the largest charter schools in Southwest Ohio. So in charter school history, we've been around a long time. When you think in terms of schools in general and traditional schools, we're still pretty
sure,
new.
Sure, absolutely. All right, Tiffany, we'll get back to you in just a few moments. And Tom Shelton, I know you were making a point here, and we were discussing the position that a superintendent would have been put in. You're no longer a superintendent, but your approach to the current legislation, had you been in office when it was passed?
Well, and to really answer your question, I was telling you a little bit about the history of Sense Care here in Kentucky. And the reason I did that was I wanted to explain that effectively with school-based decision-making councils, with districts of innovation, and with a lot of the programmatic schools that we have in our state, those schools would be considered charter schools in many other states. We've typically in Kentucky been very creative and innovative of having different types of programs, such as the iLead Academy in Henry County, Innovation Academy in Owensboro, and those type of programs. So what our thought would be as superintendents in our legislative priorities, actually, as an association of superintendents, was why should we create a new structure when really what we could do is remove restrictions for the current structure and provide more flexibility for our current schools and more funding and opportunities for our current schools to meet the needs of our students.
All right. We'll come back to that topic in a few minutes. But on the line, actually on two phone lines, we have Brent McKim, president of Jefferson County Teachers Association, and Tiffany Williams of the Cincinnati College Preparatory Academy. And Brent, we haven't had an opportunity to chat much with you yet. So, and then we'll get to Tiffany, obviously an advocate of charter schools working in that position. But Brent, as a president of a teachers association, I understand you are an opponent of charter schools. And tell me why that would be the case.
Well, that's not the case.
Oh, okay.
We're not opposed to charter schools.
There go the stereotypes.
Yes. As a matter of fact, for example, during the most recent legislative session, Senator Neal from Louisville introduced a charter school bill that I offered on behalf of the association to testify in support of. So it's not so much a question of whether you're for or against charter schools. I think charter schools certainly can have an appropriate place in addressing the needs of all of our students. But it's a question of how should we approach charter schools to ensure quality and avoid negatively impacting other schools and their students, and how can we ensure that they are truly public and accountable to the public, transparent,
and that you have the right motives driving their operation, where it's about educating kids and not making profits off of kids.
Brent, am I correct in understanding that if charter schools are going to happen in Kentucky, they're going to start in Louisville? Is that already the case? Are there some schools in the planning stages right now?
Well, there may well be, but it's not necessarily going to start in Louisville. The law that was passed enable charter schools to begin anywhere in the Commonwealth, so they could begin anywhere. Now, Jefferson County has about a fifth of the students. We're an urban setting, and often you see charters appear in urban settings, so we're probably more likely to see an emergence of charter schools in Jefferson County. But a principal could work with their school district and parents to potentially convert their school into a charter school in any county.
Really? Oh, very interesting. I'll tell you what, again, we're going to keep Brent, of course, is going to be here for the duration of the program, and we have another little more than a half hour in this week's Eastern Standard. But Tiffany Williams is only able to stay with us for the next maybe 15 minutes or so. So, Tiffany, let's talk a little bit about a charter school, the one you are the K through 6 principal for Cincinnati College Preparatory Academy. And I understand Brent was talking about the fact that schools, charter schools, are often in urban areas. Am I correct that you're in an urban area of Cincinnati? Tell me about your school.
Absolutely, sir. We are in an urban area. We are located downtown Cincinnati in the West End community. However, we do serve the entire Cincinnati area, and we also have open enrollment for students outside of Cincinnati as well. So we do serve an urban population. You are correct in saying that. Just to tell you a little bit about us, yes, we have been around since 1999. We started as an elementary building. We then expanded by adding on grade levels yearly until we eventually were able to complete our high school and have our first graduating class in the year of 2011. So that's just a little bit about us. However, like I said, we are K through 12.
So who are your students? And you say people are coming from a fairly wide range around downtown Cincinnati. What is the appeal? What draws students to the Cincinnati College Prep Academy?
Absolutely, sir. I believe that what draws students and parents to our community is they just have an option, and they're offered another choice that perhaps a neighborhood school where they are currently that they are currently living in may not offer those specific programs or some of the services that we offer. We have a few things that define us from others that we, we're proud of. Some of those things, besides our fine arts programming, we also offer, through our 14-year partnership with the Carlander YMCA, we're able to offer things like swimming and other health and wellness programs. So we take a holistic approach to our programming to try and address some of the needs of the urban community so that needs are met before they enter the classroom.
What about the student composition in terms of their racial composition, composition in terms of the social, and I'm trying to think of economic background status. Yeah, do you have rich kids, poor kids, white kids, black kids? I mean, is it a mixture? Is it a very diverse environment?
Our environment actually consists of about 96% African American. 4% are Hispanic or other, and we have 100% free and reduced lunch in this area.
Wow. So, but this is truly a very urban environment. And
yes, sir, it is the urban environment.
And how, from economically, are these kids in need? So you've got, they're participating in the school lunch program, obviously.
Yes, they are in need, and we do have a wide amount of students that are impoverished or living in poverty that we serve. On the other hand, we do have some students. We have a small handful that come, like we said, from the outside of the Cincinnati area, and a small handful that come from some of the suburban areas. However, they're still in need. qualifying them for that free and reduced lunch program. So there are many, many needs that need to be met as far as personal and family needs, which is why we provide our holistic approach and our wraparound services and things that we believe really help our students get prepared and get their mind and their mental state ready to learn and attend to their academics.
Tell me how the school got started. It sounds to me, but the nature of the school and the population that you're serving, that someone must have seen it as a mission or a cause. They had something in mind they wanted to accomplish. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. So our founder did see a need where they wanted to offer choices to parents and options where perhaps there were some unique services available that we could meet needs of students. This was at the beginning stages of our school. Now, have other schools picked up a lot of these services because they noticed the need as well? Of course. However, we tried to address that need, previously when we saw that there was a lack of that. Some of the things I'm talking about, one of the things we really take pride in and it's really vital to our school is our school-based health center. Through that partnership, we're able to keep a school nurse on campus during school hours during a time when people in this area had neighborhood schools and nurses' hours and days were limited. The nurse and the school-based health center also provide services to our learning community that would normally cause a student to perhaps miss school, so trying to impact the absentee rate that often is problematic in the urban school system. So things like immunizations, physicals, eye exams, dental sealant programs. We also recently implemented Action for Healthy Kids initiative that includes health awareness programming to encourage parents to choose healthy snack options and to get moving and get students out and up and going. Also partnering with Beach Acres, who provide wraparound services for students and families to help deal with the mental aspect of things that could happen in our school and just deal with that aspect. So just providing all of those things. Another unique option or service that our school provided that we felt like drew in some parents, with our K-12 campus design, it's very helpful to our parents that have multiple students and multiple ages. That way parents that are struggling or on the bus line, they have one location for pickup and drop-offs. Older students, maybe a senior, could pick up a kindergarten student for their mom who may be at work late at night. So it provided some consistency and some continuity and some support for those families for a lot of the things that plague our community.
You described, and the school by its very name is a college preparatory academy. What are the success rates in terms of the students actually going on to college?
Absolutely. Currently, we are working on our sixth graduating class this year. Years previously, we have graduated 100% of our students. The last 2 years, it was about 95%, 96%. Now, granted, we do have smaller graduating classes just due to the size of our school and compared to traditional schools. But most of those students, a good majority of those students, go on to college, and I believe we usually have one or two enter the military and then a few that go into the workforce. We are trying to find a way to collect data and track students as well, as far as not only making it to college but completing college, and that has become a recent goal of ours and data that we are working on trying to collect and see how effective we are as far as college completion. We want students not only to make it to college but to complete the program.
Tiffany Williams is a K-6 principal for Cincinnati College Preparatory Academy. We have another caller on the line who called. I think this caller might, because of the nature of her question, it might be good for her to be able to go on the air while Tiffany is with us. So let's, Brian Bartlett at the controls, if we can bring up line 5 and talk to Amber from Lexington, if Amber is still on the line. Amber, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thinking that maybe you might want to be on the line while we're talking to Tiffany Williams. Did you? Because you were mentioning something about the access to lunch and other amenities available in the schools.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I appreciate it. hi to everybody on the panel, and thanks for your thoughts. I recently wrote an opinion piece for Kentuckians for the Commonwealth magazine Balancing the Scales on the charter schools bill. There are six major points that House Bill 520 failed to address. They didn't fully address funding for charters. House Bill 471 states that some funds shall be transferred from public schools, but the bill fails to address specific funding questions. The bill didn't cap the number of charters that can operate, which if you read charter research, that's a very important thing to do. The bill didn't regulate who can apply to become a charter, including for-profit corporations. It didn't place clear regulations on how transportation funds can be used. It didn't address how or if students who attend charters will be fed. And the most concerning thing about the bill, I think, is that it failed to require a certain percentage of students who qualify for a free or reduced price lunch be admitted or given preference to Kentucky charter schools.
And so why would that be a concern? Because that would, you know, mean that you're serving lower income clientele?
Right. So I feel like that's a really important concern because the Kentucky reps who sponsored and voted for House Bill 520 said that the reason they were doing it was to provide more educational opportunities and choices for parents. Mm-hmm. But I just don't see how that's possible when the bill explicitly excluded language that would require students who, by virtue of their economic status, have less choices to begin with.
All right, Amber, I'm going to ask our panel, I'm going to ask our guests to respond to that in a few moments, but I want to get back to Tiffany Williams of Cincinnati College Prep Academy because her time is short. She's only able to stay with us for a few more minutes. And maybe, Tiffany, you could respond to, you mentioned the fact that your students qualify for the lunch programs and you're serving a lower income population. What do you think about, have you heard much, have you followed Kentucky's legislation and its movement to authorize charter schools?
You know what, I will have to admit that I have not followed Kentucky's movement as closely as Ohio's, of course, but I have heard some things about it. But as you stated, our school, you know, does serve this population, and we are 100% free and reduced lunch. When she spoke about transportation in Ohio, it is spelled out that transportation is to be provided by the local school district in which the school resides in. So students, for example, students in my school, we're located in the Cincinnati Public School District. Any student in that district has the right to be bused to our school. As far as funding in Ohio, I do know that charter schools are given less per pupil dollars when it comes to students than the traditional public schools.
Tiffany, are you able to stay on the line for a few more minutes? I know you wanted to get off here, but I need to take a station break. Can you hold on and we'll come back to you in a moment?
Sure, sir. I have just a few more minutes.
Okay, good. That's excellent. We're talking about charter schools. We have more guests than we have time to get all the content in, but please feel free to join us at 800-621-8890. Standard on the WEKU stations. We're talking about charter schools on this week's program, and we're interested in hearing from you. If you have a question, a comment, or a personal story on the topic, the Kentucky General Assembly this year, just a few months ago, passed legislation. The governor signed it. It's law. Kentucky can be authorized charter schools now, thanks to the General Assembly, and we're interested in your opinion of that. 800-621-8890. Send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or send a tweet at wekuest. I'm not sure if we're going to be able to return to Tiffany Williams or not, but let's turn back to Richard Day, Brent McKim, and Dr. Tom Shelton. Folks, who wants to jump in here in response to some of what we've been discussing with Tiffany?
Well, I was thinking about Amber's comment. I think your question to her about why is it important to have economically disadvantaged children involved in charter schools, I think has a lot to do with how House Bill 520 was sold. And if you pull up Secretary Heiner's video where he talks about why we should have passed the bill and some of the governor's comments, that was very central to the mission, if you will, that was the intent, that we were going to serve some typically underserved populations. But then when you read House Bill 520, it says that we encourage charters to work with disadvantaged children. Well, that's kind of like going down the expressway and seeing a sign that says we encourage you to travel 70 miles per hour. Mm. So I think that's really where it becomes an issue.
That got softened in the process of negotiating.
You leave a few loopholes and then people get creative on you and you never know where that's going to go.
Okay. Well, I promised Tiffany Williams we'd come back to her and pick up. You're again talking about your school and its service to underserved populations, school lunch programs, coordination of a project with the YMCA and other projects of that type. Why don't you any closing comments you want to offer, or advice you would like to offer? You've been in this school, the Cincinnati College Prep Academy, for a good number of years now, and as a principal for K through 6 students, what would you advise Kentucky folks in terms of the charter schools that the state is likely to authorize? What would you hope would happen?
I hope if charter schools are going to happen in Kentucky and if they expand in Kentucky, that that the consumers and the people that are involved in it have an open mind and think about providing options to students where perhaps there are not many options. I want them to think about students that are in underprivileged areas or impoverished areas and think about making sure that those students are provided the same opportunities as students who are in better areas, or not, for lack of better words, I would say, in more well-off areas. I would hate for a student's education to strictly be based on the property value of their home. Mm-hmm. I think that education should be equal, should be equitable across the board, and we should be able to provide services in one area that we're able to provide in another. So I think that we all have the same goal, whether you're pro-charter or you are opponent of charter. I think that we all have the same goal. We want the best for students, and we want to make sure that all students are getting great education. Or a great education. So I think we all have the same goal in mind. It's just about how we reach that goal and how we work together. Charter schools, in my case, our charter school, we like to partner and with our traditional public schools. We want to help because, in a sense, we're all educating or trying or attempting to educate all of the same clientele, and we're trying to find the best way to do it. They've been having, they've been trying for many of years, and now we're trying as well to see what's the best way and how can we make some accomplishments. So I just ask that they go into it with an open mind and think about equitable education.
All right. Tiffany, thank you so much. It sounds like your school is a good example of what charter schools can become and how they can provide a service to the community and an alternative. Tiffany Williams, K through 6 principal for Cincinnati College Preparatory Academy. Thanks for being with us on Eastern Standard.
Well, I thank you for having me on, and I thank everyone in the panel, and I hope you guys have a wonderful rest of the show.
All right. Thank you so much. We're talking about charter schools, and we encourage listeners to feel free to get on the line or send us an email, wekueasternstandard@gmail.com, or call 800-621-8890. Brent McKim of Jefferson County Teachers Association. Brent, the closest community in Kentucky to the Cincinnati, the largest city in Louisville, I guess the needs in Jefferson County might be, the best comparison of anything to a situation such as Cincinnati. Do you see something like what Tiffany was talking about occurring potentially in Jefferson County?
Well, I think every school that is serving an at-risk population really needs the kind of support and wraparound services that Tiffany was talking about. So if we're talking about those wraparound services and that level of support, I think every school that's serving a high percentage of free and reduced lunch kids have those same needs. The question is, if we divert funding from those schools to charter schools and create a second redundant system that's maybe not really coordinated with the existing school system because of having multiple authorizers in the school board, or because the school board didn't think it made sense, but it was overruled by the state and the required to be authorized, then you can have a situation where the students that are in the traditional public school system in similar settings actually have a harder time receiving the supports and services that they need because of the negative economic impact on the existing school systems.
Brent, are you saying...
That's why...
I'm sorry, I want to
say that's why local school boards need to have the ultimate and final decision on whether or not it makes sense for all the students.
Well, that's exactly what I'm wondering. You said something about being overridden by the state. Is that an option? Tom Shelton is nodding. Yes, that potentially if the local school board, and you mentioned in some communities like the combined city-county governments, I guess the mayor may be involved in the process. I mean, who all is involved in approving these schools?
Well, in Louisville or Lexington is where you have the possibility of mayoral authorization of charter schools.
That's as well as the superintendent or the
mayors would have to actually file to say that they want to do that. They actually have to indicate that that's something that they want to do. But to Brent's point, that was one of the concerns I brought up earlier that we've had about the bill all along is that there's an appeals process where the State Board of Education can override the decision made by the local board of education and require the authorization of a charter school in a community. And, you know, that was one of our biggest concerns all along, whether it's Louisville, Lexington, or anywhere else in the state. We believe it's the local board of education who knows the local community better and knows the needs there. And they're the elected officials who were elected to supervise education in that area. And so that's a problem that we think about in the bill. And one other problem that Brent specifically mentioned that we've had with the language of this all along is our caller earlier indicated House Bill 471, which was the budget amendment that was tagged along with this House Bill 520. What many people may not realize is House Bill 471 opened up the current budget from 2016 to 2018. It doesn't address the budget from 2018 forward. So there is no funding structure for charter schools in this state beginning in 2018, 2019, and forward. So this issue is going to have to be revisited. How do we fund these schools? Because we're so poorly funded and inadequately funded in our current schools, taking money from the current schools is actually going to hurt, you know, some students and education in some areas and move it to other places. We need more funding in order to make this successful.
And you're saying that revisiting, that's going to happen again at the General Assembly level?
It has to, because there is no, the funding structure in House Bill 471 goes away.
Wow.
At the end of the 2017.
A preview of something that may be on the agenda in January.
Right.
We do have a caller on the line, and I think she's got some important questions that we need to include in the last few minutes of our conversation on charter schools this week. Elaine in Lexington, thank you for being part of Eastern Standard. Go right ahead.
Hello. I wonder if any of your guests have a notion as to how much of the recent push for charter schools is due to churches wanting to insulate their Christian children from a more diverse population, and also trying to get out from under the educational standards that always being rewritten, but like to get out of the science thing where maybe they can teach creationism or something that's not, wouldn't be involved in the public school curriculum.
So the issue of the possibility of church sponsorship of charter schools, is that, or folks perhaps maybe not necessarily affiliated with the church, but perhaps with a religious or a belief motivation behind their...
Churches wanting to have more control and and limiting what their students are exposed to.
Okay, well, Elaine, thank you for that question.
Well, House Bill 520 is pretty clear that that would not be, charter schools would not be allowed for religious purposes. I think more likely a concern would be in urban areas where it might provide a vehicle for parents to opt out of busing kinds of situations and then impact the relative racial balance among all schools. We've seen historically, I guess around 1975 or so, when Jefferson County schools desegregated, there was a spike of white flight where a number of suburban parents essentially left the system.
Did that not happen everywhere?
It happened in many places. Sure, it did not happen everywhere, but it happened in many, mostly urban places. And it could provide an opt-out for parents that had those kinds of feelings.
This is Brent.
Yeah, Brent.
Could I add in? I think the caller's concern is an important one because at the heart of many of our concerns about charter schools is while they are extolled as by their advocates as public schools, it really should mean more than just the fact that they get public funding. It should take more than that for them to be a public school. And part of that question of what it means to be a public school includes, are the schools accountable to the public? Is there local democratic oversight of the schools in order to keep them in compliance with local community values and norms and so forth? And the caller's point's a valid one because typically, in the way that our charter law is written, unlike a public school where you have an elected school board that oversees it, once a charter school is authorized, they don't have any elected body that they answer to. They have a board of directors that the charter itself appoints, which may or may not include a parent from that charter school, and which doesn't really answer to the public. And what you see in other communities is a polarizing effect from this. So if someone is of a point of view where they don't want their children exposed to the science of evolution or climate change or what have you, there may be a charter school that, while it's not technically a religious charter school, they may have a curriculum that deviates significantly from the accepted curriculum in the public schools, and you would have parents maybe that choose to send their children there, and it becomes a self-selecting situation where those parents are fine with that, so there's no complaints from the parents. However, the local taxpayers are paying for an institution that may drift progressively away from what they would accept from a public school, and yet there's no ability to provide that kind of monitoring.
And no oversight by a board of education or an elected body of any kind. Let me turn back to Tom Shelton here because we're just about out of time. Tom, you mentioned a concern about charter schools being more free in areas of this type, curriculum and perhaps in some other areas, and the need for public schools to be treated equally. I mean, how do you see the institution of charter schools in Kentucky affecting public schools overall?
Well, I think the main impact that I see is them without additional funding or additional resources being put forward for charter schools, I see the biggest impact being taking away resources and funding from our current schools, which would have a negative impact to some extent in wherever that might, you know, happen, particular individual schools or even at a district level. So I think, you know, taking the same pie and slicing it differently is the biggest negative impact we'll see. But to the points that you're asking about there, you know, one of the concerns we had was private schools being able to apply to become public charter schools now. although we couldn't have the church schools, religious schools, as we mentioned earlier, you could have private schools applying. And so we wanted to make sure that the teachers in these schools had to be certified teachers through the standards board, just like our current teachers do. We wanted to make sure that the assessment that the students take is the same assessment that the public schools take. But the issue came down to superintendents to say that, you know, if these type of flexibility or freedoms are being given to charter schools, why would you not give them to public schools? And the answer we always heard back was a little disconcerting to me, because the answer would be back as well. If we find that these are successful in charter schools, then we'll come back and revisit the public schools later. And I'm wondering, why do we create a new system and a new structure when we could have made some of these same possible changes and positive impacts with our current system?
We're just about out of time, but let me toss this out to all three of our remaining guests. What's the general track record of charter schools? Are they generally seen as being successful? Are they generally seen as not doing so well?
Really mixed. Mm. The results are really mixed. And I don't know. I was a career school principal, and I think there are good schools of all different kinds, good private schools, good public schools, religiously affiliated, you know, non-religious. It really depends on a community of responsible adults that want good schools for their kids.
Brent McKim, let me ask you, what's your impression? Are you hopeful about what charter schools might mean?
Well, I would say, in response to the quality question, I think where we see charters having the highest level of success, they tend to look the most like traditional public schools with a great deal of oversight. They tend to be not-for-profit. They tend to be authorized by the local school board.
Okay, Brent, I'm sorry.
We have that kind of transparency.
We got to go. Thank you so much. We really appreciate that. Thank you, Brent McKim. Thank you, Richard Day. Thank you, Tom Shelton, for being part of our discussion. I think we did shed some light on the topic of charter schools this week. The show will be available as a podcast later today. Also, it repeats on Sunday evening at 6 o'clock. We want to thank Marissa Hempel, Devonna Gaines, and Zach Redding, our producers for the show, and Brian Bartlett at the controls. Of course, we're glad to hear from you anytime, WEKU Eastern Standard @gmail.com. I'm John Hingsbergen. Thanks for tuning in for Eastern Standard on the WEKU stations.